Listen to every episode of Schlereth and Evans on demand at 1043thefan.com. Brought to you by First Bank. There's no business like your business. Talk to a First Bank business specialist today. First Bank, banking for good. Member FDIC.
Not taking a quarterback.
Right. And they only go through the first round. So it's, you know, I mean, there's that. Like I said, other people will get driven down in the second round. That's good for the Broncos.
KKFN and KKFN HD1, Longmont, Denver. From the American Financing Studios, the best Broncos coverage. Denver Sports Station. Sports Radio 104.3. The Fan.
Denver Sports Snapshot.
The Broncos have hired former 49ers quarterback coach Rich Scangarello as their new offensive coordinator. The Nuggets will host the Chicago Bulls tonight at Pepsi Center. Nugs looking to bounce back after their big loss to the Warriors on Tuesday night.
Snapshot presented by Schomp BMW. One price, one person, 1 hour.
Question mark with Mark Schlereth is brought to you by Brakes Plus.
Every morning at 8 a.m., we take the best question you have for Mark Schlereth using hashtag question mark on social media and the text line. And now it's time for question mark.
Yeah, just a reminder, question mark can come in at any time during the show or during the day. Uh-huh. And here's one that I actually squirreled away when it came in at about 6:14 this morning because I liked it. I immediately flagged it as question mark material.
Mm-hmm.
And this is talking about the hiring of Rich Scangarello and the idea that he's going to help evolve the Denver Broncos offense.
Okay.
Here's the question. Why do I sense an air of disapproval in Mark's voice whenever he discusses the new age offenses? What am I hearing there? Good observation. You sound like you are chewing on glass whenever you are asked to discuss the evolution of these offenses and how you need a, you know, new, young, fresh approach to help evolve these offenses, these tired old offenses that we've watched for so long.
Well, it's just because I think it's ridiculous. That's all. I just think that you act like older coaches, guys who've been in it for a long time, can't evolve. Like, that is such a millennial way of thinking. Maybe it's just because of kind of the thought process that goes into it. Like, only a young guy can be innovative. Only somebody who's young can get that done. And, you know, the whole thought process of, hey, we've got to get a young guy because he'll communicate with our younger players. When, like, the generation of kids, even my own kids, man, they don't talk to each other. They text message each other. Like, how is that creating communicative skills with your players, being able to establish connection with your players when you can't even speak? I think the whole process is silly. I don't like the whole, well, if he's a young guy and, you know, he sat down and he and Sean McVay, you know, drank from the same coffee pot, then certainly he's Sean McVay. I think it's disrespectful to Kyle Shanahan. I think it's disrespectful to Sean McVay that you think as an NFL owner that some young guy that worked with those guys is going to be those guys. I mean, those guys are special. And, you know, they have those skills. And we've talked about this before. One of the greatest communicators I've ever seen on a football field is 71, 72-year-old Wade Phillips, who happens to be coaching in a NFC championship game this weekend. So I just, there's a certain amount of disdain for the stupidity that is what the public thinks.
Is it stupidity, Mark, or... I think it's something else. Look, a lot of these general managers, there's a reason why every coach that was fired this offseason, no GMs were fired. Okay?
Right.
I mean, we have GM replacements. You know, Reggie McKenzie was fired before, but everyone understands John Gruden's running the show there. I'm talking about people who are in charge. Okay?
Okay.
Coaches were fired. Nobody who's in charge was fired. Correct?
Mm-hmm.
So, there's always an element of, we're trying to cover our butts here. Sure. And don't think that doesn't factor into your thinking, whether it's consciously or subconsciously. Mm-hmm. It factors in. So when you start to get a trend out there that younger, more innovative, more creative, you know, it becomes, you know, it's like, you know, it's like the consultant in whatever business you work in. You know, a consultant comes in and, you know, comes in with these things that you should do. And you're all sitting back going, really? Really? All it's designed to do is take what was old and somehow put a new, fresh, spin or paint job on it, okay? Isn't that what maybe we're seeing here? Because otherwise, what you're saying is that truly the people who are making all these decisions are stupid. I don't think they're stupid. I think they understand that this whole bit of these guys coming in and just revolutionizing offensive play calling in the NFL is exactly what you're saying it is. But if you're trying to excite, encourage, and, you know, maybe deflect a little heat off yourself, this isn't a bad wave to get behind, is it?
Yeah, and I'm saying don't fall for the banana in the tailpipe, people. It's not that the owners are smart when it comes to the business of making money, regardless of what that is. So owners know that, hey man, if the trend is because we had one young guy and Sean McVay make it, like when the Rams signed Sean McVay interviewed. And the Rams were like, he left and he went and interviewed with the 49ers after that. And they had called Sean McVay and said, hey, dude, as soon as you're done with that interview, get on a plane, come, and we're bringing you back here. You're our head coach. And their thought process was, he's probably a year too young or a year or two too young, but we can't afford to let him go because he's that dynamic of a person. That dynamic of a leader, that dynamic of a guy, that we'd rather hire him and have the learning curve of a year or two than not hire him and be out and somebody else have this guy. So that's how the process went down with Sean McVay. But the fact that you think, one, I'm going to hire a young guy and he's going to become Sean McVay, I think is stupid. There's a couple of things that lined up. Like, one, they have 11 first-round draft choices on that football team. They have stockpiled really good players on that football team. They've got the best player in football in a guy by the name of Aaron Donald. They've got first-rounders in Ndamukong Suh, what's the guy's name? Flowers, in Brockers, in Aqib Talib, in Marcus Peters, just on the defensive side of the ball alone, and then a bunch of second and third rounders that play on the defensive side of the ball alone, as well as an all-pro left tackle, the first player in the draft in Jared Goff at the quarterback position, a first rounder in Todd Gurley.
11 total on offense and defense.
He inherited an unbelievably talented team. Now, a talented team that, to some regard, you know, underperformed, and they weren't all there. You know, he's brought some of those guys in too, but he does a great job of putting those guys together. But where the owners are smarter, they know that, hey, this is going to get our fan base excited. Even if we're not good, at least our fan base is going to be excited. And what does that mean? It means we're going to sell tickets. It means we're going to make money. But to just think that you're going to get some young guy and he's going to revolutionize football. I'll still tell you this. Show me the teams every playoff game that won line of scrimmage, and I'll show you a team that won the game. And so that may not be sexy, and that probably doesn't sell as many tickets. So from that part, they're smart. They understand what sells. But the whole thing that I am trying to give to the general population is don't get duped by, oh, we got to have a young guy. Like, don't get fooled into believing that, the message that they send, because that's just not the truth.
But you know it, I know it. I've been doing this now for 30 years total, mm-hmm. here in Denver for over 20. And if there's one lesson I have learned above all others, is that teams love to sell the idea of the two P's, promise and potential.
Mm-hmm.
It's the core of what teams try to sell. And
right.
I get it, because when things aren't going well, that's what you try to do to excite and hold on to your fan base. You sell the idea of promise and potential. Now,
correct.
Look, sometimes it works out. A lot of times it doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
All right. We've been here in Denver in the midst of a long, long drought, with the other three teams. You know,
right.
I mean, it's been over a decade since we've seen any real, you know, deep in the playoff type success from any of our other teams besides the Broncos. And what have those teams done consistently over the last decade plus? They have given us youth movement after youth movement.
Mm-hmm.
And the promise and the pension. They haven't worked. Now, the good news is, right now it would appear after, you know, long droughts that, you know, maybe, just maybe, these youth movements are going to really start to bear some fruit, which is
sure.
awesome, which is fantastic. But it's been a long time coming,
mm-hmm.
okay, for a lot of us. So, but that's what you have to do. You have to sell the idea of promise and potential. And it used to be it was always just with your players, you know?
Right.
Youth, young. This is going to be the next big thing. Now I think it's bled over into coaching.
Right.
Younger is better in coaching.
Oh, yeah.
New, young, innovative, creative,
energetic.
Energetic.
Dynamic.
Think of all those buzzwords. God, I could be a consultant.
Right. Well, certainly. No, you couldn't. No, you couldn't be a consultant. You know why?
Because I'm too pragmatic?
No. You could,
cynical?
Because you've had success doing what you do. See, the consultants actually failed at what they did, and now they become experts at, like, what not to do. So you're actually a good radio host. So it'd be really hard for you to become a
good point.
A consultant. Those guys tried to be good radio hosts and failed. And then they became consultants.
It's like they say, those who can't coach.
Right.
Those who can't teach. Those who can't consult.
Yeah.
I got you.
Yeah. So you can. So you, that's.
We got to clean up something here real quick.
Okay.
It's funny. I just said clean up something. So we were talking about how the Broncos, could really use a 3-down linebacker.
Mm-hmm.
And we started talking about Devin White out of LSU, who Mel Kiper in his first mock draft has going to the Lions at number 8. Boy, I'd like to see him here in Denver at number 10. But you mentioned that you've already done some research and that Devin White apparently owns horses. And he will ride his horse Daisy around the LSU campus.
Yes.
So the idea is, how cool would it be if Daisy and Thunder came out to lead, you know, the Broncos out of the tunnel one day, right?
Mm-hmm.
But then you raise the question, what happened if Daisy and Thunder had horse babies, as you call
yes.
them? Or as they're typically known, fillies or colts.
Fillies or colts.
Well, you call them horse babies, which I think sounds kind of cute.
Yeah, no, they're horse babies.
And we started tossing out the idea, the spawn of
Daisy and Thunder.
And Thunder. We got a lot of suggestions, but to me, there's only one. She ran calling.
I mean, I defy anybody. Just be in your car, long highway, stretching out in front of you. You know, maybe it's that time when the starting to turn to dusk.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the sun's going down, and darkness is starting to creep up on the landscape, and that song comes on, and
I
defy anybody not to have a little bit of their awesomeness leak out. That's Michael Martin Murphy, isn't that
something? I do believe so, yes.
Did he ever have any other song other than Wildfire?
You don't need.
After that, you just quit.
You quit. You're like, boom, mic drop.
Yeah. You're just like, hey, man, I made Wildfire.
Yeah.
Get off me.
Ugh.
Right? Come at me.
I mean, I don't know if there's a song that I listen to that I can never stop listening to, no matter how many times I've heard it, and every time it's like I'm hearing it for the first time. You know, I think there's really only one other song that makes me feel that way.
Wind blew down from the ground. Yeah. The difference is he's got a lot of songs. Michael Martin Murphy does a concert. He just walks up, does Wildfire, and he drops the mic and walks off. And the thing is everybody's satisfied.
They're good.
It's a 3.5 minute concert.
That's right.
And they're like, woohoo, this is awesome. That is. You're right.
Yeah.
Wildfire.
It's like when I saw Joan Jett at Hudson Gardens one time. What a disappointment that was. I mean, she was like, you know, she was like it back in our time, right?
Yeah.
And she played a, I am telling you, 1 hour on the dot. I mean, it was like 1 hour, boom, I'm out. I mean, it was still light out.
Right.
People hadn't even finished their picnics yet.
Yeah.
And she was done. I'm like, wow. Hope you should wear a mask when you go and cash that check. Joan Jett.
Well, I mean, how much did Joan Jett really, how much were those tickets really?
Come Doesn't on. Matter.
Was what? She playing with Pat Benatar?
I wanted, no! Pat Benatar would have given me more than an
yeah,
hour.
Yeah, Pat Benatar was, she was a performer.
Jeez.
Wildfire.
By the way, there's only,
good call.
If not Wildfire, Daisy and Thunder, Days of Thunder.
Days of Thunder.
Days of Thunder.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What about America, Horse with No Name? I mean, if we're going to go, what's the name of your horse? Doesn't have, the horse's name, no name.
People are really digging your horse babies, by the way. One text, horse baby, Schlereth, you kill me.
The Kentucky- Two horses get together, have a romantic evening,
yeah.
Bottle of wine.
Yeah.
Next thing you know.
Nuzzle.
Nuzzle. There's going to be horse babies.
Horse babies.
That's what comes of that.
That's right.
Just letting
it's
you know.
It's science.
Mm-hmm. It is.
Uh-huh. Okay. All right. Where were we?
We were talking
this
horse babies.
This is tough because now yeah. I'm kind of... Kind of betwixt and between right now.
Yeah, you know what? When we go down one of these roads, it's really hard.
I really got to make sure that when we go down these roads, it's near the end of a segment, not right in the middle of it.
I know, because it's hard to transition.
Now I'm going
to
transition. All right, here's what I'm going to transition with optimism. Here we go.
Okay.
So, I get it, and I'm getting a lot of it on the RamosLive.com text line, 303-713-1043. You know, what are you doing hiring an offensive coordinator with very little experience? Didn't we see how it was tough for Joe Woods? And, you know, he admitted that the game went too fast at times. What are we doing this all over again? Here's what I do like about the move for Scangarello is you're going from the Mike Shanahan, Gary Kubiak tree.
Mm-hmm.
This is Kyle Shanahan's offense that we are going to watch here. And Kyle Shanahan got his offense from Gary Kubiak and Mike Shanahan.
Mm-hmm.
Mike Shanahan, Gary Kubiak got his offense, Mike Shanahan did from Bill Walsh.
Right.
So, I know what Bill Walsh did, pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
I know what Mike Shanahan and Gary Kubiak did here, pretty good. I know what Kyle Shanahan did with Matt Ryan in Atlanta. Pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
I see the early returns in San Francisco with Nick Mullins and C.J. Beathard. And while Jimmy Garoppolo was healthy, undefeated, pretty good.
Right.
So I don't think that this is a bad thing to tap into. Will mm-hmm. there be some growing pains early? Obviously. But, you know, there's some rock-solid lineage to what they're going to try to do here offensively.
Sure. I mean, you go all the way back to the Houston days. Kyle Shanahan took over as the offense coordinator in Houston for Gary Kubiak running his offense at 28 years old. So, I mean, that's where he was. And oh, by the way, you know, Matt Schaub was going to Pro Bowls. Matt Schaub. Let me repeat that. Matt Schaub was going to Pro Bowls. So, I mean, understand how this offense and has it evolved? Certainly. I mean, everything evolves, right? It evolves based on the way you play defense. So, you know, everybody's like, now everybody plays, I mean, the majority of players or majority of teams all base out of a single high safety. You know, in my day, there was so much more double high safety looks, you know, so much more cover two. And now it's a single high cover three where you're buzzing. You're buzzing the safety down. A lot of times they call it robber or whatever, but you're buzzing him down into an 8-man front. And now it's how do you attack, you know, that 3-deep zone stuff. And there's a million different ways, you know, there's a million different ways to play cover three or to play cover one or to play cover two or cover four, whatever. I mean, but the bottom line is you're adjusting your offense based upon the defense you're getting to. So there's a part of it that's kind of reactionary based upon, you know, how you're trying to attack the defense that, that your opponent is playing. So that, I mean, that's how it works, and that's how evolution of a play happens, you know. And now I've seen plays during the course of my career, evolve, just based on the way different teams were playing us. Like, I'll give you, for instance, we used to be, when I played in Washington, we were a huge counter team. Counter, 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 counter. People started playing counter, wrong shoulder, trapping the trapper. You know, it was a real, I mean, it became violent collisions. And the thing about the big time counter runs, you know, people think the counters are outside running plays, but the big time running plays, when you run counter, meaning guard and tackle both pulling the opposite side, you know, and kicking out and running up, the big time plays always kind of cut behind the center, actually. And, you know, we were playing, we ran so much counter that people started, you know, playing it a little bit differently. And in the midst of a season, the counter outside play developed, and you know, we changed the blocking scheme based upon the way people were playing us, making people play us more honestly, and that's the evolution. I mean, that's how the evolution part, that's how that works. That's, you know, that's how it's created through your circumstance and the need, because people are playing you a certain way. And I mean, all coaches have the ability to do that. I mean, it's pretty simple.
Can I bring up the uncomfortable elephant in the room here?
Sure.
Shouldn't they just have hired Kyle Shanahan in the first place?
Well, yeah, absolutely.
I mean, is this sort of a couple of years later trying to make up for the mistake that you made in the first place? I mean, all we're saying here is, like, look, here's our guy. You know, here's the guy that's going to caffeinate the offense. Here's the guy that's going to come in here and be bold and innovative, and he's going to be running Kyle Shanahan's offense, and he's going to be bringing us all the stuff that Kyle's been doing, that Kyle was really successful with, and this. You could have hired Kyle.
Yeah. Well, that would have – listen, man, you know, 100%. And I was a huge go get Kyle from the start. Was I not? So, you know, I mean, those are the, you know, you decided to go in a different direction, and, you know, that's the decision you made as an organization. And do I think it was the wrong decision? Absolutely.
Look, most of the time I like to, sometimes I steal from the texters.
Uh huh.
I know you steal from me. But this is 100% whole milk, this text. In fact, you're going to use it. I know you're going to use this
right
on television, because
I'll,
you
probably
know,
use it today.
Because of all the, you know, talk about getting a coach from, you know, this tree and that tree. I mean, we talk about trees all the time. Here it is. Guys, I agree with you. If we wanted the Kyle Shanahan offense, we should have hired him 2 years ago, or hire Mike Shanahan last year or this year. Here's the line, Mark. Cutting branches from the tree is rarely as good as taking the trunk.
I'm not even quite sure what that means.
No,
but I love
come
it.
On.
Cutting branches
from the tree is rarely as good as taking the trunk. What's the trunk? When you think of a trunk of a tree,
yeah,
what do you think of?
It's the base. It's the
roots. It's embedded. It's solid. It takes, you know, it takes chains and tractors to get it out of the ground.
Right.
A branch can break on its own.
Yes.
Snap it off in a firm wind.
That's why you don't put the baby carriage up there, whatever that thing is, when the wind blows. The cradle will rock.
The cradle will rock.
Yeah. The baby rock, the cradle. You don't put that up there in the branches.
Right.
You staple the baby carriage right to the trunk. That ain't going nowhere.
Right. So when that bough breaks,
the cradle will fall.
Down
comes. By the way, that's a terrible lullaby.
I never thought about that until just now.
Right.
What
and then the
awful
baby's
image.
Falling out. Like, why would you put it up there in the first place?
Right.
Who are these parents?
You guys know that most nursery rhymes are awful. Like, even like Ring Around the Rosies that you used to play when you were a kid.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
That's uh-huh. about the bubonic plague.
What? What?
Who's it? What?
Hey, Mike.
Wait
Mark,
a minute. What?
Why don't you do yourself a favor and read a book for once? Please. It's about Ring Around the Rosie
is about
pocket full of posies. You put flowers in the bodies of the pockets because the bodies were stacking up.
Ashes.
The skin turned to like an ash color.
We all fall down?
Yeah.
Ooh.
Your skin turns to like a grayish ash color and then you die. This is a great topic here.
Goodness gracious.
Read, most nursery rhymes are awful.
How has this gotten by our politically correct,
genuinely flabbergasted right now.
Yeah.
Seriously, it about the bubonic plague?
Yeah. Listen, it started in Europe. Everything's backwards over in Europe. They're like so depressed.
Right.
Eating
it's gray.
Crumpet.
It's gray in Europe.
Man.
Sun never shines over there.
Whew.
People's teeth. You know what I'm talking about.
See? There you go. No matter how dark it gets. There's Mark Schlereth at the rescue. Rescue us.
Right.
Just like that. Man, you are good.
Yeah. Right. You're welcome. Oh, my goodness.
I
have dentists.
Forget about what we want the Broncos to do at quarterback in this year's draft. What do we believe John Elway will do? That's next.
This is Steve.
Hi.
Steve loves manila folders.
It's true.
That's why he started a company supplying manila folders to large corporations.
In both white and eggshell.
What Steve doesn't love is spending time paying suppliers and browsing for loans. Luckily, First Bank offers time-saving treasury management tools and business loans, so you can spend more time with your passion, even if it's manila folders.
In both white and eggshell.
Okay, Steve. First Bank. Business banking for good. Member FDIC. Go to efirstbank.com/business for more details.
So we're kind of chopping up Mel Kiper's first NFL mock draft 1.0. And in it, he has the Broncos at number 10 going cornerback. DeAndre Baker, cornerback, Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't have a problem with that one.
No.
Wouldn't have a problem with all. But the question of quarterbacks you're all asking, where does Mel see the quarterbacks going? How many going in the first round? And this is subject to change, by the way. Remember, it was at this time right now, a week before the Senior Bowl, that Baker Mayfield was still considered to be a late first round, early second round pick.
Right.
We all
right.
know what happened there. The stock can soar for these quarterbacks over the next couple of months. I still think when it's all said and done, there will be at least four quarterbacks taken in the first round.
Okay.
At least four. So anyway, he's got Dwayne Haskins out of Ohio State going to the Giants at 6. He has Kyler Murray going 13 to the Dolphins. And he has Daniel Jones out of Duke going 29th to the Patriots.
Mm.
Doesn't have Drew Lock in that first
right.
round yet. I suspect when it's all said and done, Drew Lock will be a first round quarterback and we'll have at least four quarterbacks go in the first round. Mark, we all debate, every Bronco fan does this, no matter where you go, the conversation comes up. What will the Broncos do at quarterback?
Mm.
And everybody has their theory as to what they should do.
Right.
Forget about that for a second. What do you think John Elway will do? Because that's all that matters
right.
in the end. So against the backdrop of, does he look in the mirror and see a team that's rebuilding? Does he feel this is a team that can still contend? Against the backdrop of basically being 0-3 when it comes to identifying franchise quarterbacks after Peyton Manning?
Mm-hmm.
And the idea that he maybe doesn't want to do this much longer and he's got 3 years left on his contract. So when you put all that together in the stew, what do you think?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of things. I think one, that John Elway still is building a roster and you've got to overcome some of the mistakes of the past. So I just don't see a quarterback being taken at 10 overall by John Elway. I don't believe that's going to happen. I think Haskins, obviously will go, go higher than where the Broncos pick. So I don't believe that'll happen. So I think you're going to be into roster building, but I think there's definitely you have, and I believe this, you've got to take a quarterback in the second or third round or somewhere in there that you believe it has the potential to develop into a starter. I think you have to do that. Now, maybe they look at Hogan and say, well, that's our guy. We believe that, you know, he's got an opportunity. I don't necessarily buy that, but I think that you're going to take a quarterback, I think you're going to take a quarterback second, third round type of area. And who that is, you know, if that's Locke or if that's, Greer or whatever, you know, but I believe that's going to happen. So I think that's the direction they go in, Mike.
Interesting. So you think he adopts my khaki pants strategy?
I think he goes khaki pants. I think he needs to. I mean, I think they should have done it last year. You know, you and I have both been in agreement on this.
See, I think the key here is that I don't see John doing this for an extended amount of time. I don't see him being GM for life.
Mm-hmm.
I think with his current contract running 3 years, I think the idea of missing out on quarterbacks the last three times he's tried, I think it eats at him. I think mm-hmm. it bugs him.
Right.
It gnaws at him. And I think either for the time that he has remaining here or what he wants to sort of bequeath to the next guy as an inheritance is the idea of a franchise quarterback.
Right.
And he talked about can't stop swinging for the fences. I think he swings for the fence at 10.
Mm-hmm.
I think they draft the quarterback.
Now, again,
this isn't what we want him to do. It's what we think he's going to do. I think he drafts a quarterback at 10.
Okay, so then who do they draft at 10?
I think it's going to be Drew Locke.
So you think a guy that Mel doesn't even have in his top 32
right now
is going to move right now, but yep. He's going to move all the way up to 10.
Yep. Hey, look, nobody had Patrick Mahomes going as early as he did. Nobody had Baker Mayfield going number one overall at this time.
Mm-hmm.
We got a long way. Mel's going to probably do about 8 more of these before draft night.
That's true.
And I'm sure if you go back and look at him and the McShays of the world, and you compare their final mock drafts to their original mock drafts, there's mm-hmm. plenty of change. Plenty of movement.
Yeah, lots. Well, there's no question about that. There's a ton of movement. But you think he's going to try to swing for the fence and get himself one?
Yep.
And then, let me ask you.
Let me add a little caveat to that. I mean, it's possible that, you know, he maybe understands where the draft is falling and maybe he feels he can trade back a few picks and still get his quarterback. But I think the Broncos go quarterback with their first pick in the first round.
Wow.
I don't think he feels he can wait. This is not somebody. I don't get the sense John Elway wants the slow play things. I don't think he's interested over the next 3 years of just slowly, gradually building this up block by block
mm-hmm.
so that somebody else can reap the benefits of it. I think he wants to be bold. I think he wants to be aggressive.
So let me ask you this. This time, if you draft a quarterback in the first round, this is one where you just play him from day one.
Oh, of course. This is not Paxton Lynch. Paxton Lynch, the situations are so dramatically different. I mean, back then you were coming off a Super Bowl. Okay. How that room was going to react was crucial to what you did at the quarterback position. You had to go with somebody that had the blessing of those veterans that had just won a Super Bowl. Now, who cares? A lot of these veterans aren't even going to be here. You know, what leg do they have to stand on to say, well, you've got to think of our feelings. You've been 5-11 and 6-10. No, you draft the quarterback now. You throw him right in there. Yeah, I'm fine with that.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what he does.
Okay. Draft one now. It'll be interesting to see. So do you think if they did that then, would Case Keenum stay here to mentor, or would you dump him too?
I learned what it is to be a franchise quarterback.
If that's the direction you're going.
Case Keenum is never going to make, again, the kind of money he's set to make this year.
Mm-hmm.
You gladly say, yes, sir, may I have another? I will gladly be your backup. I will gladly be your Alex Smith.
Right.
I will gladly be your sensei. Of course he would. For that kind of money?
Well, I mean, I'm not saying you give him an opportunity. You just cut him.
Oh, you just cut him?
Right. I mean, of course he's going to say yes. What do you need me to do? But if you're like, I'm just going like, to, well, I don't know what the difference is, how much money you would save, but
well,
I know there'd be a bunch of dead money.
I would play the guy right away, but come on, you know the dinosaur way of thinking in the NFL that, you know, well,
but that's why
you gotta play Nathan Peterman first before you go to Josh Allen. You gotta play Sam Bradford first before you go to Josh Rosen. You gotta play Tyrod Taylor first before you go to Baker Mayfield. I mean, that's just dumb.
Isn't that why you went, you got yourself a young, you know, you want young coaches and you want young, right?
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that why you went that way? So you don't fall victim to the old way of thinking?
Two P's. Gotta sell the two P's. Promise and potential. So if you're gonna draft a quarterback, if you're coming off a Super Bowl, you know, you don't have to give in to that. But when you're coming off 5-11, 6-10, what do you gotta wait for?
Right.
And you know what? Even if you draft a quarterback in the second round.
Yeah.
Play him. Played Andy Dalton right away, didn't you?
Right.
Played Derek Carr right away, didn't you? Those are high second round picks.
Yeah, I know.
So why not? Will Greer, play him right away. Let's do it. Notice how I'm giving you specific names?
Yeah, you are.
Do you even pick up on a hint of fill in the blank quarterback strategy here?
Yeah, I do.
Do you? No, there is none. There's no fill in the blank. I'm giving you specific names.
You're going after a certain
what?
Well,
what?
You give me a lot of specific names, meaning it could be anybody. See, the thing about that
I think it'll be Locke.
But the thing about that is
I don't think for everybody saying, no, Kyler Murray, I'm sorry, I just at this stage of the game, I don't see John Elway deviating from what he is. Come on, he just made moves in the coaching staff that shows that he wants to do what he's comfortable with. So, you think all of a sudden he's going to make one big last bowl quarterback move and he's going to go against form?
You know what? That's too bad.
Drew Lock.
Yeah, good for you, bud. Lock it down. Hushman's Ode.
What?
Hushman's Ode.
Hushman's Ode?
Hushman's Ode, the commercial.
Hushman.
Lock it down.
Okay.
Instead of Hushman's Ode, the guy goes, Hushman's Ode.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about
lock
that one.
Down.
All right, okay. What kind of OC is Skaner going to be? That's next.
So this is always my biggest question whenever you bring in somebody different when it comes to in charge of your defense, in charge of your offense. This is the question that I think is on the mind of most Bronco fans, and so I'll just ask it. So when we sit down in front of our televisions or we're up in the stands watching the game, what will, in this case, the Broncos offense look like? How will it look different than what we've watched over the last couple of years? Because isn't that the idea that they're going to come in and do something different than what we've seen the last couple of years? So how does that look for football fans just watching?
Yeah, it's not going to look much different. It's not going to look a whole lot different than what you saw, you know, with Coobs or even Billy Musgrave. I think a lot of things are going to be the same. I think you will see more of a kind of a check with me type of scenario. So one of the things that Kyle does exceptionally well, and one of the, you know, Kyle Shanahan being, does really well with his quarterbacks. And when you do one of their games, and Atlanta, you know, carried this over from Kyle Shanahan and they kept it with Sark is, their offensive coordinator who they just recently released is now the offensive coordinator in Arizona. But, every play they called had a can it prospect, meaning, if we get what we want, if we get the defense we want, we run it. If not, we can it to something else, meaning we kill it, right? And so you'll see them get the play in early, which I like, and they'll start a motion or whatever, and the quarterback will either keep it on and run it, or he'll calm it down and say, can it, can it, can it, can it, and then, you know, they'll get into a different play. So there's multiple plays called within the huddle. So there's usually two plays within the huddle that are called. And that's how, you know, that's how they operate the offense. And so you'll see, you'll kind of see a lot of that. And again, that's, you know, you want to talk about, you know, people talk about that being the evolution of football. I mean, that's a simple check with me, which has been run. I mean, we ran all the time when I walked in the league. We ran a ton in Washington under Joe Gibbs. We ran a ton of check with me stuff based upon if we get the look we want, you know, check with me 40 gut. And if we got the look we wanted, we kept it on. If we didn't get the look we wanted, we changed the play. And, you know, everybody knew what the play was going to change to. Based on, you know, we didn't get our look, we're going to this play. So we all knew what it was. And, you know, maybe you haven't seen as much of that. You'll see a bunch of that in this offense.
Okay, so nothing at least to start that makes us go, wow. At least to start. Because, what you know, as you said, until you get the personnel in place, that's when you can start to stack concepts. That's when you can start to, you know, run the same plays and have four or five, you know, plays out of it.
Uh-huh.
But that comes with, you know, real game breakers, real talent, real guys that the defense has to respect. I mean, the only way you can truly, you know, run that eye candy and have different options coming out of one look,
mm-hmm,
is if you have the kind of players that a defense has to respect the idea that there could be two or three players making a play out of this look, correct?
Yeah, well, I mean, but a lot of what you see is, you know, a lot of what you'll see is what you've always seen. You know, multiple personnel groupings. You go from two backs to one back to two tight ends to three wide receivers. Like, you know, that's part of the offense. Whereas, you know, like, if it was somebody from the Sean McVay tree, then you would see, you know, like one personnel grouping. You'd see a bunch of different formations, but you'd see it all out of the same personnel grouping. Whereas you're going to see a guy that comes in with Kyle's system, it's going to be multiple personnel groupings, and they're going to be, you know, coming from all over the place.
You're having a hard time drumming up a lot of enthusiasm for this, aren't you?
Well, I mean, see, you guys all want me to lie to you. Oh, my God. You know what? He's going to create some plays that have never, ever been seen before on the face of the earth. This is going to be the most incredible thing you've ever seen. We'll have wide open wide receivers because he got Harry Potter's cloak of invisibility and nobody can see him. Like, stop it. Like, I've told you, everybody runs the same crap, you know, it's just...
Okay, alright, but all right. Here's...
Expecto Patronins!
But here's... Can you at least be optimistic about that? And this is the part of it I would think that you would be feeling good about. This is your offense, man!
Mm-hmm.
This is your offense! This is the offense at its core.
Right.
That won you two Super Bowls.
Yeah.
Okay? I mean, this is the offense that you know and love dearly. This is the offense that you are proud of because when you travel around the NFL and you go to places like LA and the Rams, you sit back with a certain amount of pride because you see them running the same running game you guys
mm-hmm.
ran.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, you know, I get what you're saying. You're downplaying the whole idea of offensive whiz-bang innovation and creativity, but this is, at its core, your offense.
Yes.
And you should be happy. I know you wanted Coops, but not being able to get Coops, you should be happy that this is still, you know, in theory, this is your offense. It's back. That should make you happy.
Yeah, we never left. You know what made me happy? Really good players would make me happy, regardless of the offense, Mike. That way, okay, but you, all right, let me see.
Yeah, I tried, folks.
I tried.
He's just grumpy about this.
I'm not, you guys act like I'm grumpy about the hire. What I'm grumpy about is that you think it's going to be, you think you're falling into something, Mike, that you don't even believe in. You always preach, it's not coaches, it's players.
I'm not getting blown away by, do I expect Rich Scangarello to come in here and instantly morph this offense from a offense that was 24th in the league in scoring to one that's going to be 10th? Nope. No way. No how. Mm-hmm. But after watching with McCoy and Musgrave and not really having a real sense of what are they doing? Mm-hmm. What do they believe in? What's their identity? What's their foundation? I don't know. I'm kind of encouraged by the idea that this is a guy who at least is going to try to carry on the tenets of Kyle Shanahan, who got it from Gary Kubiak, who got it from Mike Shanahan, who got it from Bill Walsh.
Okay. Great. That's really excited about it. I think this is the greatest, this will be the greatest offense we've ever had. We don't need players. We don't. We're just going to, we're win. We are undefeated. You know what? I'm going to call it right now. Undefeated.
Folks.
I tried. Undefeated.
I tried.
I'm calling. I'm making the call.
I tried.
Undefeated.
You know what you need right now? You know what you need right now?
What?
Two bowls of chips.
Oof.
Today is a two bowl chip day. Can I get that trending on Twitter?
You know what
Hashtag
I need?
Hashtag two bowls of chips.
You know what I need? I need wildfire.
Wildfire and two bowls of chips.
Mm.
Boom. All right, here comes Cecil's back, fresh from the Shrine game. Can't wait to see what he has picked up, along with Orlando Franklin in for Pritch. They're next.
This is Steve.
Hi.
Steve loves manila folders.
It's true.
That's why he started a company supplying manila folders to large corporations.
In both white and eggshell.
What Steve doesn't love is spending time paying suppliers and browsing for loans. Luckily, First Bank offers time-saving treasury management tools and business loans, so you can spend more time with your passion, even if it's manila folders.
In both white and eggshell.
Okay, Steve. First Bank. Business banking for good. Member FDIC. Go to eFirstBank.com/business for more details.